Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 5th. Welcome to the podcast sponsored by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, the makers of Leqvio, Inclisiran. Big show today, folks. Big show. We're going to look around the AFC West. We know that. We're going to answer some Ask Austin questions, and we're going to also talk with NASCAR legend Dale Earnhardt Jr., but let me not bury the lead here. Joining me as he is every Wednesday, it's LA Chargers 3-touchdown running back Austin Eckler. Austin, I am so happy. Like the first few questions I don't have to ask you, you know, hey, what's the deal with the usage? Any of that stuff? We're feeling good here coming out of week four, man.
Yeah, you know, when you put up some production, you put up some good fantasy points, you know, people in the community are going to be happy, you know, but look, you know, I got some usage that I saw in the first couple weeks, but I was able to do more with those. And so I think that's just a sign of us getting hopefully into a rhythm. It's only one game, so I don't want everyone to get all hyped up. Oh, we're back. Like, no, we got to do it week in, week out. That's what I'm looking for anyway, us to be able to do it again against what I would say is a tougher opponent, you know, within the Browns. And look, it feels good to be back, though. Feels good to be back in the end zone, finally.
Yeah,
I can't take enough away from that. Shout out to the O-line, get me in. And yeah, give me some opportunities to go score. And so finally was able to dust off the old air guitar and break it out a couple times on last Sunday.
Well, it felt good for me to see. It felt good for the people out there that obviously have you on their fantasy teams. But most importantly, yeah, I'm sure it felt good for you to break that touchdown drought and just get a good win, good team win, as you said, after the game. Like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. But first, got to take care of some business here. You've heard us talk about it every week on the show. If you're not playing Daily Fantasy on Yahoo, now is the time to start. To get started, go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy and use the promo code HARMAN15. Or just click the link.
Get your own promo code. Let's go.
Hey, it's not the worst thing in the world. Co-host yesterday, Andy Barons, said he's been at the company for like, you know, ten times as long as I had. Never had his own promo code, Austin. So maybe we'll get an Eckler 31 next.
No, I don't want to steal your thunder, man. That's all you. shout out to Matt. Yeah, use that Harmon code for sure.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. Or you can also click the link in the episode description and use the code HARMAN15 on your first $5 deposit or more. And Yahoo will give you an extra $15 in site credit. Remember, that comes right out of Andy Barron's salary. Again, the code is HARMON15 to get your first deposit bonus. The code is active until October 9th and cannot be combined with other bonuses. Rewards program terms apply. Austin, I'm giving away Andy Barron's salary for the people to play DFS. You're also doing giveaways. Let's pump that up a little bit
since,
for the people.
I guess since we're on the topic of giveaways, you know, I have my same weekly giveaway going. If you have me on your fantasy football team, make sure to tag me with a picture of it on Instagram or Twitter, and then that will enter you to win. I give away 2 signed jerseys every single week, and follow me on Instagram and Twitter to figure out who the winners are. And so those have been going strong. We just ordered a bunch more jerseys so we can keep the engagement going. So I appreciate all y'all that have me on the team. Thanks for the support. Looking forward to more.
Hell yeah. We are looking forward to more. Chargers 34, Texans 24. Let's get right into it. Austin, obviously, as you said, this game got in the end zone 3 times. You were overall super efficient on the ground, 4.6 yards per carry compared to the first 3 weeks. What felt different this week than the other weeks?
Oh, what felt different, man? I think it came down to me seeing a little bit more clear, I would say. Just getting more into a rhythm of with the O-line and with our scheme, with what we're trying to do. We had a couple wrinkles in there. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds. A couple wrinkles, but just being able to almost slow myself down and my mind down by just being on the same page. And ran a lot of the same stuff that we have in the past. And so that takes some repetition to finally be like, okay, now I feel like I know how we're going to be blocking this and what the flow of it's going to be, how Corey's, you know, trying to attack, you know, his assignment, things like that. It all meshes together. All these little things matter. You know, a half a step means the difference between, you know, an arm tackle or, you know, getting 4, 5, 6 yards up the field. And so it comes down to repetition, right? Repetition, putting it together in practice, and then actually coming and applying it to the game. And so what was different? I would say just more time to be practicing and actually doing it, which, you know, hopefully we can continue to build on that now, right? Just every streak starts with one. We got one in the books as far as a win and got the run game in the right direction. We still have room to go. As our running back coach was saying, he's like, you ever see that friend, you know, when you're eating chicken wings and they never eat all the meat that's on the bone? He's like, that's how I felt. He's like, that's how I felt. He's like, there was more meat on that bone out there that we could have got. And so it's like, hey, we're getting there, but we still got a long way to go. And I agree with him.
Yeah, don't even get me started on the people who leave meat on the bone, on the chicken wing, man. I mean, that is a cardinal sin, okay? You come around the Harmon household and leave meat on the bone from a chicken wing perspective. It might be the last time you get the invite over, right? Or at least you're going to be corrected. You know,
like you get those people that have like, they'll have like the drumstick, and they'll just like eat like a little ring around it and like put it down. It's like, excuse me?
What are we doing?
Oh man, good stuff.
Yeah,
so I can paint that picture for you.
Oh, I mean, that's a good analogy, and that's a phrase you hear a lot, I think, with the running game and running backs. Like, there's always like there's meat left on the bone, that type of stuff. And you know, from a fantasy perspective, before we kind of break down, you know, more of the game, we talk so much about, you know, the freak out about Austin Ekeler's season. You know, this, that, and that. Like, he's a top five pick, and like he's, you know, not only scoring this many points. If you look at like the standings right now, Austin, you're the fifth highest scoring running back on the season. And obviously some of that is like,
wow, really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. See, look, I know I had a couple of rough weeks, but the thing is, like, what's my team? My team believes in me. I believe in myself. They're giving me opportunities. So I'm still squeaking out, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 points here and there. I just haven't had those big touchdown games that I've had in the past. And so finally got in this last week. So it's going to turn those 10, 12 games into 20, 30 point games, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It, you know, obviously this is what sometimes fantasy points come in Costco. They come in bulk there. Right. So that's the way it is. And you're still lapping the field in terms of like targets, catches at the running back position. So sometimes you got to be a little patient. And this is what I say this all the time to folks out there, Austin, and I'm sure it kind of comes into your guys' mind too, from a production standpoint. We talked about riding the wave on the last episode, right? Not everybody goes out there and is Cooper Kupp and like puts up and even Cooper Kupp like has some slower games, but just every single week, great, 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 or, you know, solid, 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 solid every single week. For a lot of guys, like, it can come in bulk like this, and you're superstars in fantasy, and Austin, you were obviously drafted as a superstar in fantasy. That's how it is, man. Like, they're going to give you those weeks. Austin's going to give you those weeks where he scores 3 freaking touchdowns. And like, unless you blew it at every other spot on your roster, you probably won that week because of that individual effort. But going back into sort of the game a little more, one thing that really caught my eye, you know, obviously we had a big injury we talked about last week. Rashawn Slater, he was all pro level left tackle as a rookie. He was awesome. You guys lose him for the season. But, you know, I think, myself included, some folks might have just expected you guys to flip like Storm Norton to left tackle, who had battled with the right tackle position. But you had a 6th round rookie. Tell me if I'm saying his name right. Jamari Sawyer.
Yep, Jamari. Yep.
Yeah. Jamari was really impressive in this game in left tackle. Like, I'm watching it, went back and watched the film too. And like, he's blowing guys up in the run game, playing pretty well in pass protection. Like, that's a guy I wanted to call out on the show because it was really impressive. And I think, you know, sort of kind of sneaky. Like, if he'd been an offensive skill position player, we'd be talking about him all week. But like, we got to give some love to the lineman here too.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's a position he played in college, actually. So he had familiarity with playing that spot. And obviously we had Rashawn there. So it's like, where can we fit Jamari in? So we're trying him out at guard, trying him out at tackle. And yeah, it meant he was holding it down. You know, he'll have a pretty good challenge this week, you know, coming up with you know, with the werewolf over there in Cleveland, Miles Garrett. So it was good. It was a good game for him to get his feet wet, you know, see how he does. We make sure we're protecting him, but he didn't really need it. He showed that he can hold his own. And then just like myself, we're going to see if, you know, you can do it again. Can you do it again? Right. And then can we do it again? Right. And we'll continue to just we switch it up enough where I think we take some pressure off of almost all of us, because we're mixing it up in the run games, you know, the deep throws, the short throws, the quick throws, you know, some play action. So we have enough, I guess, balance in our offense that it really keeps the defense on their toes. Like they can't just straight up rush up field every single play. And so that definitely helps out. So yeah, very proud of him. You know, he got a game ball. That's what's up. Well-deserved. Looking forward to getting to work with him on Wednesday or today, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's exciting, man. When you have guys step up unexpectedly and fill, you know, because again, sixth round rookie, like, you don't
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it was unexpectedly, just the result was unexpected, right? Yeah. Like, we're expecting him to step up, right? To the degree of that efficiency, we don't know. Like, where is he going to step up? Like, you know, is he going to give up a couple sacks, get beat around the corner? It wasn't really like that. You know, there's things that we can all can clean up, but that's football. So, yeah. You know, shout out to him coming in. Another guy that came in was Michael Bandy. He made two big catches for us. That came in, one of our little receivers. I say little because he's short, not because of his play status. Because
yeah,
he's an absolute stud. But came in, made some good catches too, and he's been showing out for us all season or all preseason. So I was happy to see him get some burn in there as well.
You guys just have some. I don't want to say like random, sounds like disrespectful, but unexpected guy seemingly pop up, you know, every single week. You've had this like fullback. What's his name? Xander?
Xander, yeah. Xander.
He's popped in a couple of touchdowns. Obviously, we talked about DeAndre Carter's big week one, but that's the mark of an offense that is captained by a quarterback that we all believe is, you know, one of the best guys in the sport, right? Like, talent elevating play at quarterback will bring these guys like Bandy, like Xander up every now and again, man. That's just
absolutely. And yeah, I think we saw that a lot with you know, Tom Brady. You know, we saw that a lot with him, where it's like, man, you got these guys that aren't getting really paid, but they're balling out there, right? It's because he's giving them opportunities. You know, O-line's protecting him, and he's putting the ball in spots where, you know, it's undefendable, or making the right decisions where it's like on time, you can't defend it. So yeah. Like I said, man, playing with Jay Hurd makes me want to continue to play for a lot longer. So I'm enjoying life right now.
Hey, you brought up play action earlier, and this is something I wanted to talk with you about. You know, in week four, Justin Herbert, 14 play action attempts, according to Pro Football Focus, the second highest on the week. Only Geno Smith, the great Geno Smith. I mean, my God, Geno is balling out there. 53% of his dropbacks were play action in week four. That just... Shout out to Geno, man. He's executing that offense really well. But Herbert, 14 attempts on play action, 11.9 yards per attempt on play action throws. How much, like, can you speak a little bit on like how the play action game marries with the running game? Because that is sort of the debate and a topic of discussion, I guess, a lot among like football observers, just how much those things kind of flow together. So I'm curious about your perspective on it since you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really something fans, I would say, even pay attention to. You know, like, you have to actually like want to know about the game to, I feel like, dive into the effectiveness of doing play actions and things like that. And so for y'all fans out there that know nothing about play action, what play action even means is basically we fake run the ball in a passing play, right? So whether I'm coming across the quarterback in the gun or coming under center and coming around, Justin's faking me the ball and then getting his eyes down the field. And so what that allows us to do, from my perspective, is it allows us to freeze the linebackers. A lot of times it's not very long. Like, they understand. They're really smart. They see the O-line doing a pass set, and they're already out. They're dropping out. But it's that one split second where it's like, oh, he could be handing it off, that holds them for, like I said, it's literally like half a second to 1 second. If you hold them for 1 second, that's a long time in an NFL play that are averaging four or five seconds. So what it allows us to do is get separation, right? Because while this is all going on, we have receivers going long, we have receivers coming across. So we're starting to stretch the defense out, which, what happens if you stretch the defense out? Well, there's more space, right? So more space is being created in the defense, which allows more lanes to throw the ball, right? What you do have to risk, though, is your pass pro, because if someone is rushing up the field, a lot of times, you know, the quarterback's not got it. He doesn't have his eyes down the field right now. If someone gets beat right now, you know, you're going to probably take a big sack where otherwise he could get the ball out quick to a hot throw or throw it out or dirt it. So what it allows you to do, if you can execute it, is get some more separation, holds the linebackers in, and yeah, makes it a little bit easier to find some throwing lanes.
Do you find that, because, you know, obviously your running game hasn't popped off all year. You had a great game in week four, but we've discussed about the struggles to kind of run the ball in the first 3 weeks. But, you know, nevertheless, like, you look at Herbert's numbers and they're so much better in play action than not in play action. Like, his completion percentage is 10.7% higher. His yards per attempt is like 2.3 yards higher. And you said earlier, like, fans might not know this stuff. You'd be surprised, man. Like, if folks are listening to a football podcast in October, you know, like, they want to know this stuff, man. So, like, never feel like I mean, it's good to explain it, obviously, but never feel like people don't care about this stuff, because I'm telling you, like, people want to know from an NFL player more about the sport like this.
For sure.
And on that, it's just interesting that, do you ever find that, like, it doesn't even really matter if you're running the ball that well? Sometimes, like, play action is just a good, like, thing to have in your back pocket anyways, because it's just, quarterbacks are just more efficient in that style.
I mean, I've never thought of it like that. That's maybe a little deeper than my thinking. You know, I'm thinking a bit more strategically as far as, you know, just what it does to the defense, not necessarily like, oh, these are our higher percentage or efficient plays. And if that's the case, then that's great for us, because, you know, people are like, regardless if we have a great run game or not, I didn't think we ran the ball that well. We still ran the ball. Like, we still more efficient. Like, I averaged more per carry, but we only had, I don't even know how many yards we had, like 70, 80, somewhere in there, maybe. So it still wasn't like a crazy run game, and we're dead last in rushing yards per game. Right. But here's the thing, you still have to respect the run. And so when he does that, with Jay Herb's just so efficient in general, right? If you're putting stretch on the defense, like, that's just, I mean, it's going to make it even more efficient, right? It's like, it's even easier for him. So what's easy for him right now, just stand in the pocket, he can do that. Yeah. But if you also give him a little more of an advantage as far as being able to see the defense, and maybe it's the rhythm of the play that he really likes too. You know, there's a lot of different factors that might play into that for him personally, because there is some type of rhythmic flow where it's pro pop up and you're looking for this, you're looking at boom, 1-2 right now. Usually it's usually not sitting up in the pocket unless it's like some type of sprint out type of thing. And I guess that's another type of, you know, play action that we have that I didn't really speak out is the rollouts, right? Where we're rolling out and now it's allowing him to run. And we've seen so many great throws that he can make on the run down the field. But what does that do? It's buying time. It's stretching out the defense. So still has the same concept. And yeah, hey, we'll keep running. We ran them all last year too. I'd be interested to hear the numbers from that last year for the same type of like percentages and stuff.
So far this year, Justin Herbert has the third highest dropback percentage with play action. He's only behind like Marcus Mariota, Daniel Jones, Tua. So he's fourth in terms of guys that have like played, you know, the majority of the first few games. So obviously, and then the other guys are up there kind of higher, like, you know, Tyrod Taylor, who got three dropbacks in that game, but on the same offense. So I think it's really fascinating to see, like you mentioned, just the effect on the defense, all that stuff. But, you know, it's like an art thing for quarterbacks too. Peyton Manning was always so great at like actually selling the play action fake. Cause sometimes you see guys and, you know, they sell the fake. It's like, come on, man. Like everybody knows.
Right.
That.
Yeah. Some people show like a hand. There's no ball in the hand. And be like, ah, you know, like I remember Phil used to do that sometimes. You used to like show a hand. Like, ah, I'm like, okay. Or just go like this. Like, you just go like, ah, that was his ball fake. He was like, all right, man. That's not much of it, but whatever. We'll take it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm looking it up as we're talking about it. Like last year, 27.6% dropbacks with play action for Herbert. He's like around 37% so far this year. He was like well outside the top 15 quarterbacks. So maybe that's something that's gone a little bit different this year. And it's interesting. It's something to keep thinking about. I think that play action game will only get better when Keenan Allen gets back in there, like, as, you know, a deadly middle of the field route runner as well. So a lot of good stuff there. A lot of good stuff on the play action. I love to think about that. One other thing I wanted to ask you about this game before we move on. Obviously, you guys got the win over the Texans. The Texans are sort of in a rebuild mode, right? Like, they're trying to find some young guys.
They haven't won a game. It is what it is.
They have not won a game. But they are looking for sort of younger pieces on that team. One guy in particular, Damian Pierce. That guy can play for sure. Shout out to my mom. I mentioned this on the podcast with Andy yesterday. I picked up Damian Pierce. Like, someone dropped him in her league, and she picked him up, started him, and won last week. So pretty shout out to my mom for that. Damian Pierce, though, any thoughts on what you saw out of that guy? Like, rookie running back and, you know, just ripped off one explosive run and generally just looks like a pretty good player right now.
Yeah, dude's a stud, man. And I think, you know, we saw that, you know, when he was coming out of college, you know, he kind of reminds me of Robinson out in Jacksonville. You know, that kind of like the same type of body, like thick, like bowling ball type body that can run. And when you have that type of body, it's just hard to bring those guys down. When you have these thick, you know, those squatty bodies, I call it, right? Our little shorter squatty bodies, baby. It's hard to bring us down just because our legs, our center of gravity is so low, our legs are thick. And so we can protect ourselves and use our shoulder pads very well. I saw that a lot from him, you know, it's just coming downhill, you know, being efficient. I think, like I said before the season, like it was going to be interesting to see, you know, he's in a situation where they're, like you said, they're in like kind of a rebuild phase over there. And he's going to be the one that stands out. In my opinion, he's, you know, one of the ones that's helping carry their offense, and he'll continue to get going. Yeah, I mean, but it shows that you need more than it's more than a couple guys that, you know, like you need a whole squad to be, you know, effective in the NFL as far as long-term success as a team. But as an individual, he's definitely a stud, and I'm looking forward to seeing his career plan out, you know, the rest of this year.
Yeah. Good player for sure. Definitely going to make some noise the rest of the season. Really, really impressive guy. I think it's you're so right about the low center of gravity. It's funny, just different styles of running backs, too, because then there are guys like Derrick Henry who are these massive dudes with, like, you know, respect, like comparatively in context, like smaller legs. He's not built like a James Robinson or like a Damian Pierce, like the squatty body is. I mean, that's gonna be tough for me to not laugh saying that, but it just built differently, different styles, different strike zones. And when you're a smaller guy like that, I mean, you could speak to this. It's just the ability to drive through with your legs. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, because I mean, the game is built off of like physics, right? Like it's all about leverage, you know, velocity, you know, all of these different, you know, factors that play into how your body is created. And when we're shorter, you know, our leverage as far as blocking, as far as getting low, you know, usually you've heard the saying, you know, low man wins. Well, we're already shorter, so it's easy for me I have less body to move to get low, right, and to react. And so I think that actually helps me protect myself too and stay healthy as far as being able to protect my lower body, because, you know, that's what you have to protect the most as a running back is, well, first off the ball, then your lower body, right? Because you can't run without your knees. And what do you need to run? You need your legs, right? You got to protect those things. And so when you're able to, you know, drop your shoulders and protect yourself, take your hits on your, you know, your padding, you know, saves your legs and saves your, you know, career length, is being able to actually just take on, you know, these bigger workloads, because you're not getting hit in the legs. I get hit in the shoulders all day. I don't care.
Right. Yeah. Totally different thing. So I don't know. You're right. The physics of football is so fascinating. The leverage game and all that. It's God, what a good sport. Good sport overall. Good fun game.
I would say one of the best.
I would say the best. But I'm super biased, and, you know, like there's already probably way too much of my brain dedicated to football. And I always tell people I can't really get into other sports too much, because, like, if I did, I'd start to forget, you know, my address, you know, where I live, important names. Yeah. I'd come on this show and, like, you know, butcher your name, butcher other people's names. We can't be having that, man. So football, the best sport for sure. I'll just go ahead and say that. So awesome game, Austin. Awesome win overall, man. And like you said, we'll just keep building on this thing going forward. You guys over there with the Chargers, we'll just keep on building on it going forward. All right, now it's time to get into our Ask Austin mailbag segment. I don't know why I've not called it a mailbag segment so far.
Mailbag.
But might as well just go ahead and say the mailbag. Remember, people, you can get any question answered by Austin and me, sort of, kind of, whatever. AskAustin@yahoosports.com. Send emails, written, audio, video, whatever, to have Austin answer your question on a future episode. All right, first one here, and I think we could actually both tackle at least parts of this. This one comes in from Hunter. I have always been curious about the complexities of route running. What makes it difficult? Why are some players so much better at it than others? These are all like crazy athletes competing at the highest level. So without trying to sound rude or crass, what about route running is so difficult? Austin, I'll let you jump in on this first, obviously, because you do this on a regular basis. I've told you about my set my side business, Reception Perception, where I'm charting. This is what I do. Like, I chart route running, chart players. You told me years ago you're actually one of the only non-wide receivers I've told about that. It was like, well, why aren't you charting running backs? I'm like, well, bro, I'm trying to have a life too. You know, I there's already enough wide receivers out there. So I'll let you jump in on this first, and I'll give my thoughts as well.
So I would say this, with football, it's still a game, right? A kid's game that, you know, we've just taken up to a very complex level. So the game is still simple conceptually. The game is very simple, but it's just not easy. You know, it gets even harder the better athletes that the higher quality of athletic ability you have. And what I mean by that is speed, right? Timing, physicality, I'll say, I guess, awareness, recognition. And what do I mean by those? Like, there's so many different factors when running a route. Is it man? Is it zone? What's the depth? Am I hot? Which means there's one extra blitzer that's coming and I need to change my route. What type of coverage is it? If it's cloud coverage, which means cover two, I need to convert my route to this type of route now. And if it's zone, okay, I need to have some spatial awareness to know, okay, I'm supposed to keep running in this route, but if I ever feel like there's an open space, you know, when I'm out of my break, I can start to, you know, set it down a little bit and know where people are around, know where the quarterback's trying to throw it. And so there's all of these little factors that you have to be able to adjust to physically and mentally within your route. You know, as you're running off the line, you can get some type of tell before the snap, but a lot of times people are moving all over the place. You know, if it's man, you have to be able to physically get open, which is not easy, especially as, you know, defensive players continue to get better and more physical. And so I would say there's a lot of different type of route runners too. There's some that are more physical than others, some that are faster than others. So there's a lot of different strengths in running routes. And that's great because that allows us as offenses to have a lot of different types of plays that are designed to attack different types and parts of a defense. And it's not that it's hard, but I would say it's challenging to make sure you're having a good balance that makes the defense defend a bunch of different types of routes and a bunch of different types of route runners. And so with those different layers, it adds complexity onto the simple game, which makes it obviously harder to execute at a high level, you know, week in and week out, day to day. So that's what I would have to say, Matt.
My thoughts on this too, you know, as Hunter points out, you know, everybody in the NFL is big, fast, and strong. Just like, to what degree are you fast? To what degree are you strong? To what degree are you big? Whatever. My favorite part of route running and evaluating it is the deception part of it. And I think that's the part that gets, overlooked by most fans. Great example. CeeDee Lamb this past week against Washington on his touchdown, like, you could tell he's selling the go route all the way and the corner's buying it because he keeps backing up, and then he snaps back on the inside and it's a post route. Like, that art of deception in order to work yourself open into just a, you know, big open space at that point because the safety's underneath, like, that is what gets me so gassed up. Like, I weirdly have like goosebumps talking about it because I think it's that cool. Like, that's what gets me gassed up about route running, either, you know, being able to sell the vertical route, snapping back short, all that type of stuff. The deception and art and craft of it is my favorite part. Because obviously, like, you can be as fast as you want, but if you're not a craftsman as a player, like, there's going to be a certain, I guess there'd be like a certain ceiling on who you could be as a player. But to me, the guys that are big, fast, and strong, and then they become great route runners, like, those are the players who are really difficult to cover.
I want to build on what you said. You were talking about the art of deception. I kind of just immediately went to dance. Like, think of dance. Like, all of us can dance. Like, all of us can run a 5-yard hitch. But think of, like, you dance, and then think of, like, a professional dancer and, like, watching them dance. And it's very coordinated. It's very, you know, thought out. It's, you know, systematic. It's on beat. It's on rhythm. It's like, you're like, you see them, you're like, oh, I can't do that. That's next level. It's still dance, but it's like, you know, a whole next level of dance. Or you could say that for pretty much any industry, as, you know, it gets to the professional level. So yeah, I would agree. There is an art to it. You know,
yeah. Dance is a great thing too, because you're like trying to, obviously you're working in tandem with a partner as a dancer, whereas in the cornerback, you know, or whatever, cornerback wide receiver relationship, just for example, is like an adversarial relationship. But you're almost trying to do the opposite of like with a dance partner where you're trying to move together. You're like, you're trying to get this cornerback to believe you're going one way before you. And then right. watching like guys release off slant routes or fade routes in the end zone. That I think is a really good way to kind of like, they're almost dancing in concert of each other. So that's a really good way of nice. Putting it. I could talk about this all day. We won't do that though. Next question comes in from Sammy. What do you recommend to a new football fan when watching the game? I read this question too. Sammy was talking about, you know, she's gotten really into fantasy football, but like wanting to kind of expand when you're watching a game on Sunday, like beyond just, I think the mark of like a hardcore fan is they're watching more than just the ball, right? Like they're watching more things that are happening, and there's so much else going on off the ball. So what would you recommend for a new football fan to watch for when kind of trying to get smarter about the game, I guess?
Yeah, I think there's levels to it, depending on, you know, how familiar or how aware is football a part of your life, you've been around it. But if you're just brand new, like, oh, I just, you know, I'm coming into fantasy football, like I'm watching the games, but most part it's like tennis, right? Where people just, they're just watching the ball, you know, yeah, whoever's got the ball, go, you know, that's like the typical newbie fan. But as far as if you wanted to add like some level of like trying to understand the game, here's what I would watch, you know, and it's easier for me because I'm an offensive guy. So like I watch sure. from an offensive perspective. We won't even talk about defense. I'll say just watch offenses. We'll talk offense first. Watch the offense. I would say watch the O-line first. Like when the ball is hiked, you know, I'm watching the O-line. Are they blocking everybody? And then you can get to where the ball is thrown later on. But that's where everything starts for us. Everything starts with the protection, whether it's run game, pass game, right? Then you can progress down, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm watching the O-line. Oh, they're doing well. Like you start to get a gauge. Are they doing well or not? Is there people running at the quarterback, right? That's how you can tell if the O-line is doing well or doing not. Is there people running back the quarterback? Is the running back getting hit in the backfield or not? Then you can start to formulate some type of opinion about their O-line. And then you start to, I guess, go out from there, right? Okay, now we're running the ball. You know, are we getting 4, 3, 5, 6 yards, maybe more than that? Then you can start to evaluate the running back a little bit, see how efficient they are and how they're meshing with the O-line. Like everything works together. So it's like, if the running back is tackled, it's not because the running back sucks all the time. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't make a guy miss. Maybe he missed a cut. But there's everything moves and is morphs together, right? So now we're going to passing, right? After the O-line's blocked, okay, now I'm watching where the quarterback is. He throws the ball. All right, is the receiver open, right? Now we're watching receiver. If you have certain players that are on your fantasy team, I would watch them too. Like watch them, see their route running. They're not going to get the ball every time, but like watch them. Are they getting open? You know, are they catching the ball? Are they blocking in the run game? Are they running the ball efficiently? Are they make people miss? And so just little things like that, I would say start there, right? Start there. Yeah. Start watching position groups at a time and maybe your individual people to help you just further the game. And then I would also say this on top of that, learn the positions. Yes. That'll help you too.
I'm glad that you brought up the offensive line part of it because it is sort of like everything begins there. Good example last night with the Los Angeles Rams, you know, getting their ass kicked up front by the 49ers. Those 49ers, man, they're tough defense to go against. And you can sort of build the rest of the narrative from there because with receivers, it's hard because they run off screen for the most part, right? Like, and so you can't really tell, like, are they getting open downfield? Well, it's like, if Matt Stafford doesn't have time to find these guys downfield, it doesn't even matter like whether they're open or not, or and the whole timing of the play is thrown off because the offensive line is letting guys in, stuff like that. So that is a great way to start because you can sort of trickle down the rest of it from there. Last question we'll tackle here in the mailbag segment. This one comes in from JD. I'll see something like, quote, player was limited in practice or player wasn't seen in the part of practice open to the media. Can you talk about the different reports we hear and how you consume and understand these type of reports? And what do you typically do with your fantasy teams based on the knowledge of injuries, both in the weekly term and the long term? For example, if somebody has a high ankle sprain, are you like, well, that guy won't be the same for the rest of the season? I know the answer to this is probably going to be at least I would answer, it's like a case-by-case basis, and we on the outside really don't know. Like, anybody I think that is trying to say, like, well, this guy's not going to be the same for the rest of the season because of his high ankle sprain, that might be true. That very well might be the reason that a guy has a high ankle sprain and the rest of the season goes to hell, but it's really, really hard to say, and as somebody with no medical background, no knowledge, my ability to speak on it is really tough.
I mean, mine is too. I have no medical background, but I've just been around it enough to kind of have this understanding that it is tough. Like, it's tough because, like, I go through it too. I'm looking at my, okay, I'm like, okay, I got a guy that's questionable or doubtful. Okay, what's going on? I'll look at the injury report, right? Like, you know, it's a hamstring, it's a quad, it's a shoulder, did not practice. And so I always wait to the last day because the like right before game day, like, what was the final report then? Because if someone didn't practice, I had a couple weeks last year where I didn't practice at all during the entire week, but I still played in the game because I dealt with the whole ankle sprain since week three last year, and the entire season sucks, but you know, you kind of work through that. That's football for you. You know, it doesn't wait for you to get healthy. And it is a case by case. Like, what are we dealing with here? You know, if it's high ankle sprain, yeah, I'm a little cautious because ankle is like, if it's the first week, right? And then there's always that period where it's like, okay, he had this ankle sprain. He went and played on it. You know, maybe he played, didn't get that much. He was limited in the game type of thing. So there's so many factors. It really is, okay, let me look into the situation, right? If it's lower body, I'm definitely more concerned than if it's upper body. That's plain and simple. If someone's got a shoulder, okay, they're probably going to, you know, tape it up, whatever. They'll get in, they'll be able to play through it. Lower body makes me a little bit more nervous. But, man, it's so hard to ask or answer that question because how serious is it, you know?
Yeah, we just don't know on the outside. And by the way, I think teams are weirder with the injury report. I don't know if it's like the right way to say it, but it's every team is so different with the injury report, how they manage it, how they operate it. I mean, guys can, number one, be dealing with something that you never even know about right until the end of the season. Then it kind of, you know, you squint your eyes at the team and like, aren't you supposed to report that stuff? But whatever, that's another thing. And also, like, I mean, everybody is like limited now that they used to have the probable thing. And then when they did away with that, it's like, well, shoot, everybody's questionable. So I'm with Austin that for me and like, I mean, obviously if a guy's questionable and you're following like beat reporters and folks who are tied into the team, you know, prepare a contingency plan in case they don't play. Like, I don't want to hear folks out there complaining about, oh, Alvin Kamara was ruled out at the boarding of the London game. Like, he was questionable. You should have had a backup plan ready in place. Also, you should be waking up early in the morning. Like, be accountable, for God's sakes, people. But anyways, this is another topic. Like, you just want to have backup plans, but I do want to encourage folks to wait to the end of the week. Because that's when most information is going to be available. Like, if you're seeing, don't be freaking out on Tuesday because of a questionable tag. That's kind of the long and short of it. But anyways, those are our questions for the week. Ask Austin at yahoosports.com. Make sure you send in your audio, video, just regular old text questions. Doesn't matter. These are some great ones this week, and we would love to just have some good ones going forward. All right, so let's move into our as the AFC West turns segment. A lot of interesting results this week. You know, the Chiefs really had a great game against the Buccaneers. You know, Patrick Mahomes looking incredible. That was awesome to see. I mentioned, Austin, that you are the RB5 on the season. The guy ahead of you, CEH, sort of like the opposite of your season in a way that, like, he hasn't gotten a ton of touches. Like, on a per touch basis, he's been incredible scoring touchdowns. You had the big touchdown game last week. He's like just ripping off touchdowns at a high clip. That's what's going to happen when you play for the Chiefs offense. But any thoughts on what you've seen out of CEH throughout the Clyde Edwards-Helaire throughout the course of his career?
Yeah. I mean, especially early on in his career, man, I thought he was really efficient. He actually really impressed me his rookie year. And then he's you know, dealt with some injuries over this past few years. And I feel like still trying to figure out how they're going to really utilize him over there. He's still, I feel like, trying to get a role going. And I know I think that's frustrating for a player. It's like, man, I feel like I could be used more, but I'm not really getting the opportunities, or they're very limited. But I mean, I do see who they have as quarterback, and you have to understand the dynamic there where it's like, hey, this guy's doing everything, doing the most, right? Like, we need guys like that to help us keep our view count up as the NFL, make it more exciting. But as a player, as in the running back position, it's like, man, like you feel like you had a good rookie season, came in, had another strong second season, or then end up getting, you know, injured. But it's like you're trying to get back in the rhythm of getting your role back. I think that's where he's sitting at right now. I have no idea, but I would imagine that's how he's feeling. Always trying to, you know, do what you can to control what you can, but I mean, you're always trying to do more for your team, and especially when you feel like you've had success, which I think he has had success and showed that he can run the ball and is actually very efficient. Even against us, you know, he ripped a couple runs that I was like, yeah, this guy's got some skill, man. I remember he got the best of Derwin on one play. And I was like, that guy is not easy to run over. And he just trucked Derwin. You know, I'm looking forward to see his season play out a little bit more, but I think he'll get into more of a role. I think he's going to have to for that offense to be more well-rounded, which, I mean, Mahomes will keep doing his thing, but to become an elite offense, you'll be able to officially run the ball, especially late in the season.
Yeah, RB is such a rhythm position. I think people don't give that enough credit. At least I remember a conversation I had with Maurice Jones-Drew years ago, back when we were on the same show at NFL Network, and that was something he always talked about. Like, sometimes when you're in a committee, you know, and there's no like rhythm to the committee, you get out of rhythm as a runner, but that's a whole nother thing. Let's talk about this running back situation in Denver real quick, because Raiders get their first win, 32-23 over the Denver Broncos, fall to 2-2 with Russ. Bummer for Javonte Williams, going to miss the rest of the season with a pretty serious knee injury. Your former backfield mate, Melvin Gordon, also on this team. Yeah, 4 fumbles in 4 weeks for Melvin. Any thoughts just on you know, what that situation over there? Mike Boone's a guy who might get some more run. They also just signed Latavius Murray. Talk about, like, that might end up being like a 3-way split that doesn't look so good for anybody getting in a rhythm.
Man, yeah. So, yeah, Javonte, bro, man, that – it sucks, man, because man, this man's just an absolute stud out there, man. Yeah. So fun to watch, watching this man just blow through everybody, carrying people on his back, spin move, post hand, running people over, doing everything he should be as a running back, you know, carrying the rock over there and making it exciting. Like, we need people probably wonder, like, why you get excited? Like, I get excited for players to make plays, because that's what makes the league so exciting to watch, exciting to compete in, like things like that. Like, so we need those types of people to stay healthy. But obviously, you know, we can't control everything. I went back and watched that, man. It didn't even look like it was even that crazy too. That's the thing, man. Like, sometimes it's like, it's not even the craziest hit. It's just like your foot was just twisted wrong, or just there's a luck factor that plays into it. So that sucks. You know, I talk about the importance of, you know, lower body as a running back, and just a runner in general, so important. And just, you know, he's got to make sure he recovers from that, because we need to see his butt back on the field, man, making some plays. And then Melvin, yeah, I know, man. Like, I know that's eating him up. As any runner, man, you never want to be turning the ball over, and just to have, you know, that type of funk that he's in right now is just mentally, I feel like, draining for yourself, because I know he's probably been just making an emphasis on it in practice, and then come out, it happens again. But I'm not giving up on that guy. Like, that dude's a baller. Sure. He'll come back. It's still early. Yeah, it's really unfortunate, but I know the type of runner Melvin is, and he'll continue to put out some beastly highlights and make some plays for them. And then, yeah, they're bringing in some more people. Like, they're trying to figure out too. They're trying to figure out the shuffle. This is the NFL. You deal with injuries, you deal with people playing, you know, more than expected, less than expected. Like, it's how can we get this combination to flow the best? That's what we're all trying to figure out, you know, as teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely not giving up on Melvin Gordon. It's like, I always feel bad for guys that get outright like benched for fumbling, because I'm like, man, it feels like it's gonna just get in your head more in a way. It's
right.
I always feel for guys there, but I'm not giving up on Melvin either, man. I mean, it's a good guy to have around in the case of an injury. But obviously, last thing we'll talk about here before we throw to our Dale Earnhardt Jr. interview, you got a big game coming up against the Cleveland Browns, who've been pretty good with Jacoby Brissett there under center. But Nick Chubb, man, that guy is the engine of the offense. He's number one fantasy back right now. What makes Nick Chubb so good, real quick, before we throw to Dale here?
Well, the guy is an absolute menace in the weight room.
Yeah, holy, right.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen a squat bar bend like that. What is that? Like,
That's got to be some type of special bar. If that's a normal bar and it's bending like that, that thing's about to split in half on his back. But regardless, he had 600 pounds on. So I don't care what kind of bar you're using. Yeah. If you got 600 pounds on your back, oh my God. So yeah, this man, like, I was watching him like do like cleans with 400 pounds, like did a couple reps. Like, dude is a machine when it comes to just physical, you know, just physical physique, right? Like, he's just a hard dude to tackle, and he's fast. He's physical. He runs hard. He runs efficient. He hits the holes. Like, he gets it. And so, I mean, what else do I have to guy to say? That's why it's hard to bring that guy down.
Yeah, he's an absolute superstar. All right, we got Dale Earnhardt Jr. coming up here next. let's get to that interview. Joining us now is NASCAR Hall of Famer, two-time winner of the Daytona 500, absolute legend from the great state of North Carolina. It's Dale Earnhardt Jr. Dale, how we doing, man?
I'm doing great. Just kind of cruising through the early part of the week here, getting ourselves ready for another race weekend. We're kind of in the middle of the back end of our year in NASCAR, closing out the year, grinding it down to the last few weeks to celebrate whoever the champion becomes. And so it's a pretty exciting time for us right now, and a lot of great storylines going on in the sport.
Yeah, I'm curious, Dale. How has your transition been? Like, how are you involved right now in NASCAR? Obviously, you know, you've had success and then it's been a huge part of your life. Now, how are you giving back now or keeping yourself, you know, in that space?
That's a great question. So when I decided that I was going to quit driving race cars full time, I knew that I still wanted to be at a racetrack, and I still wanted to, that just feels like home to me and is the most comfortable place for me. And I just couldn't stop going to a racetrack cold turkey and never do that again. But I needed a job. I needed a role. I'd been going to the racetrack with a role, with a job, being part of a team, being an asset in some way. And so I needed that to continue. I went to a race one time without any responsibility, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I felt like I was in the way everywhere I stood, and that was a bad feeling. I didn't like that. So luckily I was, dealt with some concussions in my career, and I was out of the race car for a few weeks, and they asked me to come into the broadcast booth. And I thought, you know, I need to show people that I'm okay. That'll be a great way for me to kind of get on camera, be talking, so people can kind of see that I'm not in real trouble here with this concussion. Mm-hmm. And I got out of the, you know, I went into the booth for about an hour and did a little segment of during the middle of a race. And I really enjoyed it. And I've always kind of admired some of the broadcasters in our sport, some of the radio broadcasters and so forth, but I never saw myself, you know, being able to do that. I was always very shy and I just didn't see myself as a journalist, a media head or anything right. like that. So anyways, I got a lot of response after that. I got some texts from some friends of mine. They were like, man, if you ever really wanted to do that, you could be good at it. And so I think awesome. Also the networks noticed that. And when I got done driving, they contacted me and said, hey, we want you to do this. So I got really scared about it because I was going to be on TV. Doing live TV is terrifying, but it's kind of the same adrenaline rush I got behind the wheel of the car. Obviously nice. you don't get to get out and hold a trophy right, up at the end right. of the day. There's no championship to win, but It is a rush.
Yeah, it keeps you relevant in the space too. You know,
that's true.
And then, I mean, who better to have right than a veteran like yourself who's, you know, calling out what you see, you know, giving some more insight from someone who's been doing it. I can actually relate a lot. That's how this show came to be. You know, someone who's been in obviously the fantasy football space and the NFL space and was talking about it. And it's like, had this opportunity presented, like, hey, would you want to, you know, start a show and actually talk about it, give your insight, give some perspective from someone who's been in it. So
I told myself, Austin, that I was going to watch the races anyways. So I would might as well be sitting there,
right?
You know, watching it at the event, talking about it. I'm a fan. I was a fan first before I became a driver, and I just get to revert back to being a fan.
Nice.
And really, you know, it comes pretty natural.
Love that.
It's a totally different skill set, though. I think real fans just don't even give like commentators enough credit. Like I try to never be that guy. Like when you're watching NFL games or whatever, just like giving the commentator a bunch of grief, man, because it's hard to talk for, like, I tell people, you try talking for like 3 straight hours and not saying something stupid. Like it's impossible. I can't go more than 5 minutes without like saying something stupid. So it's a tough skill set to try to, cause there are guys that have been great football players and they get into commentating. It's just, it's a different skill set, man. So shout out to you for making that transition.
I said a lot of stupid stuff there early on when I got into the broadcast booth, and I took it personal, and I'd go on social media and criticism. Mm. I know you're not supposed to do that, man, but we're humans and we look for, I feed off affirmation. Right. And so I would go, you know, a lot of times I get that off of social media. And so I would go there and be like, man, I screwed up. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going to get better. Just hang in there with me. And so I kind of engage that way. online. But then it turned for me probably in the last 2 years to where when I screw up, I have fun. I kind of lean into it. Right. And I have fun with it because I know it's going to happen. There's nothing I can do. Right. And when you make that mistake, you just got to kind of laugh, laugh with it. You know, it just, I thought one day I'm going to, you know, one day I won't make any more mistakes. Well, that's not realistic.
Nah, right. Yeah. I'm curious. Cause I mean, this is we talk about fantasy football in here. There's a thing, and I don't know how familiar you are with like fantasy, like NASCAR fantasy. It's fantasy NASCAR.
Yeah.
Did you ever have like comments about those, about your driving, like when you're active and things like that?
Luckily for me, Austin, fantasy NASCAR wasn't super big back when I was racing. So I didn't get the kind of criticism that I think the guys probably get now.
Yeah.
And you know, what's funny is I play fantasy NASCAR now. We have a group of folks that kind of play and I played fantasy football for years. When a driver does bad, for whatever reason, I don't feel the same way I do when a player doesn't get the numbers right in my fantasy team.
Okay.
It's so weird.
Okay. So it's a different feel, huh?
But I don't know why. I really don't know why, because it's the same thing.
Right.
And, you know, that driver didn't run well and I didn't get the points to win. But, you know, I don't know. I think that we're so competitive with fantasy football in our little leagues with our friends, and there's so much pride on the line. And and, you know, and you feel like a real loser when you don't do well.
Right. So, you know, I'm curious.
You do. You feel like the worst. Like you're out of the 12 friends in this league, like you're the worst guy in the league. It's like, you know, so, but
I'm curious more about that story. Like when you got started into fantasy football, like, is it the same group? Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, we got a league. It's called the Basement League. The reason why we call it the Basement League is because we do all the drafts at my house in my basement. Nice, I have a little bar downstairs, and that's just why we call it the Basement League. But it's we've had that league forever. It's been around for at least 15 years.
Wow.
Probably more than that. But it's a blast. It's about 12 of us, and I would say that 6 or 8 are original members. And I have been in more than one league during a year, but that is my league.
Yeah.
And that will be my league. And it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. And this year I'm 4-0 after Sunday.
Shout out.
Yeah, all right, let's go. Yes.
Things are going well. So I'm enjoying it. I've had a couple championship seasons
I was gonna say 15 years. That makes sense why you're so passionate about it, right? And that's what I love about fantasy sports. There's obviously some toxicity in there, but for the most part, it brings people together, it keeps them invested in the game and themselves and the community, and it brings something that they're looking forward to every year during football season.
I'll tell you one thing that it did for me, Austin, is up until I played fantasy, I was a big Washington Commanders fan, and I still am today. And it's been a difficult 30 years, but I'm loyal and it never will change no matter what. But I only watched Washington games only, right? I really didn't care about any other team. If Washington, you know, obviously I'm gonna watch the Super Bowl, but otherwise I had nothing in it. And so when I started playing fantasy, man, I'm watching other teams. I'm learning about other players. I know, you know, all of these things about the game that I paid no attention to before. So I really appreciate that about fantasy sports, is because I was only probably tapping into about 10% of the enjoyment of the game.
Right.
Until I played fantasy.
Right.
And fantasy really opened it up for me. And so now I'm watching games that, you know, I'd never be watching just this one player.
Because you got one player. And that's the beauty of it, man. I love it. So that's why I do this show, right? Because I'm like, I know there's a lot of people that have a lot of, you know, they're relying on me, right? They have a lot invested in me, you know, and, you know, and so it's like, hey, let me show that I appreciate you all for investing that time, for, you know, having my back, for supporting me, for wanting me to do well, because it's such a rare moment in our careers where we have all this exposure, you know, nationwide. And so with the sports betting and the fantasy football, it allows us to have these people that personally know us. I have more fans across, you know, sports betting, fantasy football than I do for the Chargers, probably like 10 to 1, maybe even more than that. So that's like, man, it's so special to be able to take part of that. It's kind of like getting back to what you're doing right now, where now, you know, people know who you are, but now you have these opportunities that are presented because of, you know, the legacy that you've set for yourself. And now people want you to come back to the game, come back to the sport, and hear what you have to say. So it's, you know, it's a time where I'm trying to take advantage. So I can kind of go down the path that you're going down, right? Where now you're giving back to the game. So it's really fun.
That's cool that you're seeing that and acting on it. And I wondered, you know, when I first started getting into fantasy, I knew that it was like this additional pressure for a player, right? That's kind of and a lot of players I imagine were like, man, I don't want this pressure. I don't love the negativity that comes along with it. And I wonder, you know, if that's changed over the years, if it's still the same for some players. Some players don't appreciate it or don't want it as part of their world or part of what's going on or things they're thinking about. But it seems like you have a little bit different approach to it.
Yeah. You know, I've kind of recognized it as an opportunity. Because there's going to be toxicity in any community that you're involved in, right? That's just how communities go. There's people that are happy, people that want things changed. And so they're going to have this conflict. It's actually a good thing because it keeps us being competitive, keeps us pushing to be the best, you know, to serve all, attempt to. And so I've seen, okay, there's a bunch of people that support me. How can I use this to my advantage, right? Because in the NFL, it's a very concentrated time in our life where it's like there's a bunch of exposure, there's the monetary gain, there's the coolness factor of playing on Sundays, and there's all these different benefits. And it's like, it's not going to last very long. The average career is like 2.9 years. And so I need to really take advantage of this time where I have all of these things so I can set myself up to have options when I'm done playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely. So you're 4-0 this year. Yeah. I'm curious. Everyone that's come on here, I've just asked, like, is there a punishment for getting last? Do you guys have that in the basement?
Yeah. Basically, we do a $40 buy-in in our league, and it's I think it's like 300 and something for the winner, and second place gets the rest. I think third place gets his money back, but the last place has to buy the $40 buy-in for the champion.
So
last place is going to spend $80 to get back into the league next year.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing. I mean, I know there's probably more sensational punishments.
It's all good.
But I always wondered, man, if when you have a sensational sort of, you know, thing that the loser has to do, I mean, how do you even hold that guy accountable? He could just balk and walk away and say, I don't even want to be in the league anymore if I've got to do that. You know, because you get people that'll say, yeah, okay, if I finish last, yeah, that's fun. That'll be great for the last place guy to do until it's them.
Yeah.
Right. And then when them, then all of a sudden it's crickets. Like, hey, have you seen Billy? We can't find Billy. Billy won't answer our calls. Billy's moved out of the state. Gone. Billy's left the country.
we had Cam Jordan, the defensive end pass rusher for the New Orleans Saints, on the show, and he told us about, you know, he had to go like sit in a Waffle House for X amount of hours and like do the whole waffle challenge thing, which is, I think, a little better. Like, I never like when people have to get outright like publicly embarrassed, like stand on a street corner and hold some sign. I mean, if it's the sign like I suck at fantasy football, I guess, because I mean, why are you not just bailing on the, you know, the whole thing at that point? But fun ones like that, you know, and he was like, you know, my friends were telling me, you better FaceTime in from the Waffle House. You better send pictures, all that type of stuff. So I guess there are ways people can be held accountable.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a lot.
I always got to ask. It's always super interesting. I appreciate your time, Dale. Man, thanks for coming on the show.
Dale, before we let you go, we do want to hear about your new children's book, Buster's Trip to Victory Lane. Tell us about that, man.
Yeah, I got the book right here. Buster's Trip to Victory Lane. I'm a father of two girls, Isla and Nicole, 4 and 1 year old. And when they, came into my life, also a lot of children's books started flooding the house. And I was really interested as to why they were attracted to just certain books. And you'll have 100, when you become a father, you're going to end up with this tiny little library of children's books, and you'll have multiple copies of the same book and so forth. But the kids will only gravitate towards specific ones, and they'll want that same book every night. And so I've written books about my career and so forth, but never anything geared toward children. So I was kind of interested in the challenge to what interests a child? What is it about children's books that they connect with? And so I wanted to try to see if I could write a book that my kids would like. And so hopefully one day down the road, both of my girls hopefully will enjoy this story about Buster. But hopefully down the road, as I get older, I'll have guys and girls coming up to me saying, man, I read this book when I was little. And it's awesome. And it's one of my favorite books when I was a kid. That'll mean a lot to me. The book is, Buster goes through a lot of challenges and learns a lot about himself and his friends. But there's a lot of little Easter eggs in the book as well. Buster, the star of the book, that's my father's nickname when he was a little boy. They used to call him Buster. Oh, wow. There's a couple other little Easter eggs in there that connect to me personally that I'm proud of, but hopefully people like it.
Where can we find it?
And anywhere books are sold, but you can get it on Amazon pre-order now. The book should be on the shelves in October. I'm going to do some book signings and a few other things and a lot of media about it over the next several weeks. So
awesome.
We're hoping that people enjoy it.
Yeah. I always appreciate when, people are giving back in some form of way, because I have the saying, it takes people to help people, right? Like my shirt says, be the best you, right? And a lot of times, we all need outside people to help us. And it's little things like that, like giving that opportunity for that connection for, some type of caretaker to a child, that I remember my mom reading me this dinosaur book, when I was 3 years old, like a little itty bitty one, right? So things like that can make an impact. So yeah, absolutely appreciate you sharing that today. And I'm hoping people can find some type of value within the story with Buster as well.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on. It's been great to talk to you, Matt. Austin, it's awesome to meet you. I can't wait to go on my fantasy chat and tell all my buddies that I got to talk to you today.
Likewise.
And, they'll be excited to hear that. And appreciate you guys giving me some time.
Yep. Thank Amazing. You, Dale. Appreciate
Thanks so much,
it.
Dale. Appreciate it. Yep. All right, that's going to do it for us. Awesome interview with Dale Earnhardt Jr. from Mooresville, North Carolina. Love to see that. Thanks to him for joining us on this episode. Austin, thanks to you as always for joining us here on Wednesday, man.
I love to always hear how fantasy football is helping others stay connected, because we didn't really get to talk about it in the interview, but just like that friend group that he's had now for 15 years have stayed together. Yeah. And that's another reason that they get to stay together, and they look forward to probably, going down to the basement with Dale and, at the bar or at his bar in his basement and having some good times drafting their team. So
I love too that he just was like, and he's Dale Earnhardt. He's a legend. He's like, it's a $40 buy-in, like casual league in the basement. I'm like, oh, wow. Celebrities, just like us. Yeah. We love to see it.
Love it, man. Love it.
That's going to do it for us. You can follow Austin on Twitter or Instagram at Austin Eckler. You can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. I will be back tomorrow with Dalton Del Don for the Stat Nerd Thursday episode of the week. Oh, man, what a heater. Dalton coming off a big win with his 49ers. Until then, we are out.